you're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this 17th day of the month of October. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Always like to hear feedback. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve if you're still using Facebook. And of course, the website, which has a ton of Winnipeg Jets news, audio from last night's game. The morning papers have been posted by Dave Minuk. You can check that out at IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We welcome you to the program on this Saturday morning. The Winnipeg Jets victorious last night by a 3-1 margin over the Calgary Flames. Finally, it's taken a number of tries, but the Winnipeg Jets have finally won a home opener. First time that they've been able to pull off that feat since returning to Winnipeg. Good game last night, gentlemen. What are your initial thoughts on last night? We'll go goal by goal, but just give me sort of a broad overview of what you thought of last night's Winnipeg Jets victory.
Yeah, Drew, you mentioned it was nice that the Jets finally won a home opener. I think we all remember the first Jets 2.0 game against the Montreal Canadiens. That was definitely disappointing, even though the crowd was probably the best crowd you'll ever see. Jets coming back after all those years. But yeah, Drew, it was not the prettiest game, but it was a pretty gutsy win. And I thought that the Winnipeg Jets, again, didn't have a very good start. And you saw Michael Backlund got the early goal there. But they settled down and they got more and more comfortable throughout the game. And I thought they controlled the pace as the game went on. And, you know, Claude Noel used to call these games Picassos, if you remember. But I thought that it wasn't an A-game effort for the Winnipeg Jets, but I thought that they were able to get a win in a situation where the game really could have gone either way, guys. And I thought, you know, the game was fairly even, 5-on-5. And I thought early on in the game, I thought the Jets were allowing the Calgary Flames to enter their zone a little bit too easily. But I thought that the Jets, as the game went on, they really started to gain strength and start to sustain a little bit of pressure. In the first period, the Jets didn't have much pressure. They had a few good chances, but especially in the third period there, it started to really open up. And, you know, Buff getting that goal. I thought Buff was the best player on the ice. I was telling Rich that yesterday. I thought he was good at both ends of the ice. I think he's, as the years have progressed, and he's now, especially now that he's a defenseman and not kind of flip-flopping back and forth, I think he gets a lot more comfortable jumping into the play. And I thought on that goal, guys, Dennis Wideman really, I think, loses Buff on that play, because not only is he afraid, as Richie said in the post-game podcast, of the freight train that was coming at him, but I think he's afraid because he knows that Buff can beat him different ways. I mean, even though Bufflin can bowl you over, he can also make plays and beat you to the outside, and that's what we saw. So I thought it was a very gritty effort. And again, I thought the Calgary Flames didn't look particularly well, and they tested Pavlik early, but not that often. But it's a good win. And again, here, they're setting themselves up nicely here at 4-1. Mm-hmm. Now, even if they go 500 for the rest of the homestand, I guess they can't because there's five games left. Yeah. But even if they go 3-2, I guess,
you
I should
say. You go 2-1.
Yeah, they're setting themselves up really nicely. And like you said, it's always good to start off the homestand with a win.
Points count the same whether they come in October or if they come in March. So, you know, it's always important to get those ones that are available. Richie, your sort of overarching thoughts before we go goal by goal on last night's game.
You know, Drew, I thought it was a pretty simple game. It was fairly uneventful, I thought. You know, you saw some trading of chances in the second period a bit and a little bit more open up. Overall, I thought the Jets got better as the game went on. They didn't start very well, as you mentioned. I thought they started taking the play, and throughout the game they controlled it more and more. So I thought that's a good sign for the Jets overall. Calgary has a lot of good pieces, about two or three away from being a really good team as far as I'm concerned. but they're going in the right direction. But the Jets have better offensive depth than Calgary. I think you saw that in terms of being able to create on depth lines and have some sustained pressure. Overall, I mean, Pavlik was once again very good. Dustin Byfuglien with the big goal. You know, in a goaltending battle, in a close, low-scoring game, you know, Kari Rammo can't let that goal in. Can't let that goal in.
Great.
And that cost, especially with the no time left here, so that cost them 2 points. But I thought the Jets were the better team last night, and I thought they deserved to win.
Let's go goal by goal. The Calgary Flames opened the scoring at the 3:38 mark of the first period.
Flames win the draw right at the side of the net. Bennett on a wraparound attempt, stopped in front, rebound, they score. Backlund will get the rebound over the shoulder of Pavlik, and Calgary opens up the scoring. It's 1-0.
Michael Backlund getting his first of the year assist to Sam Bennett, and former Winnipeg Jets player, of course, Michael Frolik, picking up the secondary assist on that goal. What did you guys see on the goal that opened the scoring for the Flames last night?
Yeah, by the way, I thought Michael Frolik had a pretty good game. I thought he was effective in penalty-killing situations when the Jets had that double minor called against Calgary. Josh Juris, it was a high-sticking call on Chris Thorburn. But on that goal, I mean, it was pretty clear that, you know, Sam Bennett is trying to wrap the puck around. And, you know, there's a little bit of confusion in front of the net with, I believe it was Buff and Brian Little. And Michael Backlund kind of just is there. I mean, he's in the slot. He gets the rebound and puts it in. Kind of a simple goal, really. I mean, the puck was put on net by Bennett on the wraparound. And that's what happened. So I think, again, the Jets were a little bit sloppy in their own end. And then I thought as the game progressed, it was kind of reversed. But, I mean, that goal was certainly not Pavlik's fault.
You know, Drew, you see wraparounds nowadays, and they rarely go in. The goalies are good enough now that they push off side to side and are able to stop it. And here you see Sam Bennett, you know, pretty quick on the wraparound, and Adam Pardy, as the left side defenseman, tries to defend him. And then what happens is Bennett smartly uses the puck, uses the net, as an impediment to Pardy defending him, and it kind of starts a scramble. The Flames, if you see the goal, the Flames have three guys below the bottom of the circle in the slot. The Jets have actually all five guys below the hash mark, so it's a bit of a cluster in front of the net. But when Pardy chases, he ends up having to go to the other side of the net, and then Brian Little kind of loses his man in front, and the coverages are all off, and Dustin Byfuglien's hanging around there. So it was a little bit of a messy play, and you know, Andre Pavlik slides across to make the save, and then that puck's right on Backlund's stick. So ideally, you want a little better coverage in front of the net, kind of communication between Pardy and Little. But I'd say if you look at it, Little actually has position on Backlund right before the goal is scored, and then Backlund kind of gives him a little cross-check. So probably if you want to cast blame, and, you know, Little's played well in the past a couple of games, probably be Brian Little's guy that he wouldn't want to lose there.
And you know what? That's the second line for the Calgary Flames there with Sam Bennett and Michael Backlund. And it's a good second line. And to Richie's point, you know, earlier, Drew, I know you want to get to the other couple goals here. But, you know, Richie,
we got 3 hours.
Richie mentioned here that the Calgary plays a simple game. And I kind of watched, while watching this game, I should say, you kind of get the feeling that if these two teams were to play in the playoffs, they'd be evenly matched, like many teams are. And I think Rich nailed it, that really the only difference to me between the two teams, you look at them, both have two good goalies, both teams, that is. Both teams have excellent defenses, Calgary especially getting Dougie Hamilton. TJ Brody's injured, and I really think TJ Brody, you see how underrated he is. I thought Giordano looked the best I've seen him since coming back from an injury, but both teams very good on defense, have offensive-minded defensemen. Dennis Wiedemann, as Richie mentioned, you know, got beat a couple times here. But, you know, there's not a lot of differences between these two teams. And I think that as the game kind of went on, you saw that there's a lot of talent on both sides. But that second line, Sam Bennett, he's only 19 years old, but I thought he was also really good out there.
Score was 1-0 Calgary after 20 minutes. Shots 11-8 in Calgary's favor. The Jets are able to score their first goal at home this season in the second period at the 8-12 mark. It's Brian Little's third of the year.
Play back toward the line. Kept in by Trouba. Now for Ladd. In the slot for Wheeler. Let a shot go. Deflected in front. They score! Brian Little with his third of the year off his skate blade. And the Jets have tied it at one.
Certainly not going to get any marks for attractiveness, but it's effective nonetheless. Brian Little, his third of the year assist to Blake Wheeler and Andrew Ladd, and that line just keeps on churning as it has from the start of the year so far.
Yeah, this line, as we know, has been the Jets' steadiest line, and they were good again hooking up on this goal and then also on the empty netter there that Blake Wheeler got. But, yeah, I mean, this goal to me, Rich, is created by Blake Wheeler, really, with his speed, and he was doing an excellent job of taking the puck outside and using his size and speed. And Brian Little goes to the net. Originally, I thought Brian Little deflected it in, but it actually went off of his skate. But it was a nice goal, and really, as I was watching this game, it was just a matter of time before the Jets were going to score, because before that, I thought that they were really starting to come on there. And again, yeah, a pretty simple goal. There weren't any highlight reel goals yesterday, really, except for maybe Buffs. But Buffs was even a little bit of a fluky goal because Ramo comes off the post. So, again, Ladd Little Wheeler line was good, and it's what they always say, good things happen when you go to the net.
You look at this net, this goal. If you're Bob Harley and you're going to this film and you're saying to yourself, we got numbers here. I mean, we're covering the guys we're supposed to cover. Chris Russell pressures Andrew Ladd high to the top of the left circle for Kari Ramo, and then Josh Juris rotates on to Blake Wheeler. Excuse me. Dennis Wideman takes Brian Little in front of the net. Pretty harmless play. And Wheeler tries to fire the puck over the pass. Wideman takes his guy. Now, Wideman got burnt by Buffen. We'll talk about that. But Wideman takes his guy here, doesn't get a stick on it, hits the back, skate, and goes in. It's one of those goals where you say, hey, as you mentioned,
it was a bit of a fluky goal.
You have pressure, you put it on, you know, you put it around the net, and there you go, good things happen. But if you're Calgary, there's not much more I don't think you want your players to do there. Maybe you want Juris to get in the way of Wheeler making that play, but I mean, that's being nitpicky. That's just one of those fluky ones that goes in.
And I think something to note here, Rich, is that second pairing of Dennis Wideman and Chris Russell, the first pairing, of course, being Giordano and Dougie Hamilton. TJ Brody's usually paired up with Giordano, or at least he was last year. That pairing I really liked, but that pair also was matched up at times against the top line, and they had trouble. And Chris Russell, I would say, is better defensively than Wideman.
But, he blocks everything.
Yeah, and he's pretty underrated, actually, as far as his skating goes,
really,
too.
He's
but
a really good player.
You look at that line, and this line, I think, is underrated as far as what it does to other teams. It's a difficult line to match up against Ladd, Little, Wheeler, because they're fast and they're big, especially when you're talking about Wheeler. He's obviously the biggest guy on the line. Little's a small guy, obviously, but I mean, it's as Richie said, it's a kind of a innocuous looking play, but they earned that goal, right? I mean,
yeah, you get full marks
for
it.
I mean, they had that goal and the empty net goal, but I don't think they were as dangerous as Calgary's top line last night. Just a matter of getting those two goals, an empty netter and a bank in. But they are a very dangerous line to defend, Eddie, because they have very good chemistry and they're all talented players.
Yeah. After 40 minutes, it was one all. The Jets had opportunities. A lot of power plays in the second period. You mentioned, Eddie, the Josh Juris took 6 minutes in penalties in the second period. Tripping penalty at the 10.5-minute mark, and then a double minor against Chris Thorburn. Jets weren't able to capitalize on the power play. So after 40 minutes, it is tied up at one goal apiece. Shots are now 17-15 in the Jets' favor. The third period sees no scoring until the 18.5-minute mark, when Dustin Byfuglien does this.
The other off the board. Gaudreau back across the line. He gave it up and Byfuglien jumps up. Byfuglien, a nice little move across the line. Gets around Wideman, moves in, shoots, scores! Dustin Byfuglien doing it all from center ice all the way in. And it gives the Jets a 2-1 lead with 1:28 remaining in this third period. Baby!
Unassisted goal, Byfuglien's second of the year, and I mean, Byfuglien being Byfuglien, really. Sometimes it does apply to use that cliche phrase, but, you know, just like you said, a freight train coming down the left side.
Great call by Paulie Edmonds there, by the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're Dennis Wideman, you got to stop Buff there. You can't let Buff go around you. It's as simple as that. If you're Giordano, I think you're pasting Byfuglien against the boards, and it's not easy to paste a guy that weighs 275 pounds, but I mean, he lets him go, Rich. I mean, he walks around Dennis Wideman, and he goes to the net, and, you know, we've all seen the goal by now, but if you didn't, Kari Rama was cheating, kind of a weird situation where he leaves a gap between himself and the post, which, if you're a goalie, and I'm not.
But you know enough not to do that.
That's goalie 101. I mean, you hug the post, and for that exact reason, so that you don't let anything in, you know, as far as a bank shot or whatever, but, I mean, it's a nice goal for Buff because he uses his speed and he creates that chance. I mean, good for Buff. Buff looks over at Ramo and says, I'm putting this on net. And we know as far as Buff is concerned, he's not afraid to put the puck on net. And again, this is why they say this. This is why it's cliche. Players and coaches always say this. put the puck on net, and it doesn't matter how it goes in as long as you get the 2 points, right? So it was a nice goal for Buff, but Ramos got to stop that, and I thought Dennis Wiedemann, even though you know I'm a fan of Dennis Wiedemann, took him in my hockey pool, gets a lot of points for you.
Yeah, but you took him for the offense. Yeah, you didn't take him for the defense.
He didn't have the best game defensively, but you know it was a huge goal, and I haven't heard the MTS Center that loud since last year's playoffs.
You mean it didn't get that loud during the exhibition season? Richie?
Well, I mean, my first thought is Dustin Buffin's making himself more money every time he makes plays like this.
Sure.
And making himself harder to trade. That's what I think in terms of when I see the play, because of how very few defensemen, very few players can take the puck from end to end like that.
Yep.
If you were watching the game on TV, you're at the game, you notice that Dustin Buffin was lining up Johnny Gaudreau for a significant period of the game last night. It was funny, you know, biggest player against smallest player. I thought Gaudreau was tremendous. But Buffin was lining him up, and on this play here, it's an interesting play, and I think one of the subtle plays, parts of this play, is that Gaudreau takes the puck, he's on the left side of the ice. I think he's coming up with Yuri Hudler, I believe. And Buffin's a right side defenseman, and Buffin knows Gaudreau's going to play, going to make a kind of fancy play or stick handle. And he was creating a lot of room for himself yesterday. But to me, it appeared that Gaudreau was identifying that it was Burmistrov on the left side back end, meaning forward playing defense, and he was going to identify him as a weakness and attack him, and maybe cross over with Hudler. Well, Buffin jumps him, long reach, tips the puck away, and takes it up. Like, that's a smart play, identifying where the play was going. Takes the puck, creates speed through the neutral zone, and with his great size, goes, obviously makes that nice play through his legs, and then goes around Wiedemann. Wiedemann, there's two things in this play. I don't mind Gaudreau making a play at the blue line. You know, some coaches don't like it. Instead of getting in deep, I don't mind it. Skill players need to make plays. It's going to happen sometimes. They're going to turn it over. Wiedemann has to seal the boards. And even if he's going to get crushed, he has to get in his way. Doesn't do that. Okay? Buffin, size and speed and how he intimidates defenders is a huge factor here. Then he goes around Wiedemann. Even so, even if you don't love Wiedemann playing him there, you say, okay, at least he took the angle. And Buffin comes around the corner, and Ramo falls off his post. And it wasn't even that great of a shot when you see the replay. You think to yourself, it's a tremendous end-to-end play by Buffin. But Kari Ramo, if this team wants to get points and win games, and the way that they play a defense-first game. They're very responsible. Goalies have to make that save. Buffin, great job putting it on net. Last night's game was an example of just putting the puck towards the net. Could you get some great chances or goals go in? And it's up 2-1, the game's over.
Guys, we haven't even talked about the challenge.
Well, I personally think the challenge was one of those, we have nothing to lose. You lose your after, with a minute left in the game, or overtime.
It was the right call.
With a minute left in the game, or overtime, you can't use your challenges. NHL Central makes the challenge or judges the play. So the Jets had 30 seconds to use, the Flames had 30 seconds in which they could use their challenge. So they figure, well, challenge, because we have nothing to lose, plus it serves as a timeout anyways.
And Dennis pointed this out on the broadcast yesterday.
At the game. How do you know that?
For those who were kind of curious as to how Dustin Byfuglien was allowed, you're allowed to put yourself offside. Yeah. As long as other players aren't offside and you're in control of the puck.
As long as you have possession.
Yeah.
At possession. So if he puts himself offside and he doesn't have possession, or he puts himself offside with another player, that's what happened there. But as Richie mentioned, too, you were kind of trying to hit a home run there. Blindfolded, really, by thinking that was going to
be off, that they're going to overturn that call.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great play by Buff.
But I like the coaching decision by Hartley there.
Well, you're absolutely right. You have a 30-second timeout, and you're going to use it now anyways, so you might as well use it in a challenge, which means your timeout is going to be closer to a minute or a minute 30 as opposed to just 30 seconds.
And the off, exactly, that's the best benefit, and the off chance that they do overturn
it. That's right.
It.
There's no loss, because you're going to use the timeout in that situation regardless, because you've just, you know, there's 90 seconds to go in the game.
They probably don't use that, I don't think, if it's the first period.
No
of course not. In the first period, they wouldn't even bother that, but in this case, you can't take it, you can't roll the timeout over to the next game or anything, so you might as well use it.
That's the ideal situation for Dustin Byfuglien. Three reasons why. His team wins.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks great. He's doing it on both ends of the ice. Like, what else can make him more cash?
Every game the Jets keep winning, every time they're still in a playoff spot, every time that they're looking more and more like a quality NHL team, it makes probably more money for Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien, and it makes Kevin Cheveldayoff's job a hell of a lot harder.
And I just because of the way that the play went, right? I mean, his team wins, so he gets the winning goals with the team play. He gets a point, and the way he got the point, he defends to create offense, creates offense on his own completely, scores, and the crowd, obviously his like goal celebration that he pulls out every once in a while, crowd loves him. I mean, it was a great moment.
Especially for Dustin.
And not many players can take it like that end to end, Drew, and can be. And I like the awareness. I like the awareness on the steal of the puck from Gaudreau, who I thought was very good last night. So I thought that was a good solid victory for the Jets.
They move to 4 wins and 1 loss on the season. They're next in action tomorrow afternoon against the St. Louis Blues. When we come back, we'll preview that game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Off a faceoff, went in a backhand shot, they score! Chris Thorburn! Shot came in for the point, it was stopped, nobody picked up Thorburn! And a backhand between the legs of Allen, and the Jets open up the scoring here. It's 1-0 Winnipeg!
That from last season's, one of the Jets-Blues games last year. We'll preview tomorrow afternoon's contest. A battle for first place in the Central Division, both the Blues and the Jets with matching 4-1 records entering tomorrow afternoon's game. The Blues victorious yesterday in Vancouver in the midst of a Western Canadian road trip. They've also visited Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver so far. So the Jets, I believe, are their final stop before heading back to the Show Me State. The Blues, 17 goals for, 12 goals against so far this year. You know, we know the St. Louis Blues, they're pretty much, you know, the team that we've seen for the last number of years. Couple additions this year. You're going to see Troy Brouwer in their lineup. He was traded, acquired from the Washington Capitals.
Had a nice assist last night
for TJ Oshie. Kevin Shattenkirk, lower body injury. I don't believe he was in the lineup last night, was he?
Nope.
So he's still out. That's obviously a big loss on the back end for the Blues. And they're also going to be without Robbie Fabry, who is a rookie of theirs. He's out with a concussion. And Patrick Berglund, he's on IR with shoulder surgery. But Steen, Stasny, and Tarasenko have been absolutely lighting it up for the St. Louis Blues to start the season. A dynamic offensive line. Vladimir Tarasenko, we know what he can do. It'll be an entertaining contest tomorrow between the Jets and the Blues.
Yeah, absolutely. This St. Louis Blues team, Rich, is going to, again, cruise through the regular season. We all pick them to either finish first in the Central, second in the Central. Maybe, if you're crazy, you'll pick them to finish third in the Central, but needless to say, they're one of the top teams in the division. They have been the class of this division for many years. Ken Hitchcock is one of the greatest coaches. We all have a lot of respect for him. If you watch the St. Louis Blues, again, it seems like they just have picked up from last year's regular season. Obviously, the playoffs were a whole different story. But, you know, you mentioned a guy like Shattenkirk's out, but this team is very deep defensively. And you saw Robert Bertuzzo jump up into the play and score a goal yesterday. He, of course, came over from Pittsburgh last year. But, you know, the St. Louis team, you mentioned Tarasenko and Steen had a good game, but... Mm-hmm. I mean,
both of whom had 2 points last night.
This team can hurt you from many lines. And a guy like Laterra, I think, has more to prove this year. He didn't impress that much last year. I think he came over and he was really supposed to, you know, do more for that St. Louis Blues team. He's not a physical player. But, Rich, this team is still going to play you into a defensive, basically, it's going to put you to sleep, this team. They're so good defensively. Very, very formulaic team. Every time they come in here, it seems to be a kind of a 2-1 or 3-2 game. And, you know, the last couple of games, they've won similar kind of scores. But, I mean, this St. Louis Blues team is very deep. And then once you get into the playoffs, they have problems with matchups, right? But Tarasenko, you're still seeing one of the most talented players in the NHL. Last year was a breakout season for him. So the Jets, it's going to be a tough game. And those afternoon games, guys, we know the Jets have not done particularly well in. So... Sunday afternoon, you're coming against a St. Louis Blues team. It's very hot. So that's why the start is also going to be important. The Jets have struggled in the first 5 games with starts. But the one thing with St. Louis, too, is you know they don't have one of the best goaltenders in the league. So, I mean, the Jets will be able to score some goals if it's Jake Allen in net there. So, you know, it's going to be another one of those close one-goal games, I think.
And Drew should point out that Paul Stastny left last night's game with an injury.
Okay.
So they really are losing guys... quite quickly here, and obviously that's a factor if he's playing first line center on this squad. The squad's depth lines with some of the injuries you mentioned, maybe not as not like it once was. The thing about the Blues aren't the fastest team. they play, you know, that structured, bigger, strong game. The Jets should be able to outskate St. Louis, and so I think it's going to be very important that the Jets keep the pace up in this game. Keep the energy level up and keep the pace up. Make the Blues chase them. Because you look at the squad, and up the middle, they're not particularly fast. On the wings, they have some guys who can skate, some guys who are a little bit slow of foot. You know, you back end, you're getting Pietrangelo and Bomeister, then you know what you're getting there. But Shattenkirk's a big loss, and then their goaltending's, you know, nobody's convinced till the playoffs. So I think this Blues team's a little more vulnerable than they have been in years past, and the injuries obviously play a factor.
Yeah, and this is your first game against a heavy team. I mean, this is a big team, mm-hmm. but also the style they play. And the Jets, as we pointed out last week, I mean, the Jets are one of the biggest teams in the NHL, but I think over the years, especially since last year, losing Kane and Bogosian, they've lost a little bit of physicality. Last night was not a very physical game. I mean, aside from, you know, a few players throwing the body around, Burmistrov, Lowry, yeah. Stewart, Bufflin was throwing the weight, obviously, around, as he does. But the St. Louis Blues team, especially when you get that fourth line out there with Ryan Reeves, guys like that, they'll throw the weight around. So I agree with Rich. I mean, if you're the Jets, you don't want to change your style of play too much.
Yeah.
You want to do what's been successful, especially against the New York Rangers. I thought that was probably their most convincing win of the season, really skating well and stretching the ice out a lot and getting odd man rushes. That was something that they were really successful with against Calgary. So it'll be a tough game, but I agree with Rich. I mean, it's a winnable game, and the Jets have always played the Blues very close. So
yeah. You're going to have, you know, you've played the Rangers and the Flames over the past two games, two of the best defenses in the National Hockey League, getting guys like Scheifele's line and even Lowry's line, some better matchups has been more difficult. In tomorrow's game, I assume Pietrangelo and Bomeister will be locked up against Little, Ladd, and Wheeler. And the second and third pairings for St. Louis, a little bit more questionable. Some guys who are not yet proven. So I think Scheifele's line and Lowry's line should be able to generate a little bit more offense.
Yeah, the second and third pairings right now, again, Shattenkirk, we assume, will still be out of the lineup for the Blues. We'll talk to Jeremy Rutherford later.
Sorry to interrupt you. That also affects their power play.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Kevin Shattenkirk is dynamic offensively. Mm-hmm. And so if he's out of the lineup and if Paul Stastny's out of the lineup, we'll get injury updates on both those guys with Jeremy Rutherford coming up next hour. But the Blues' second and third defensive pairings, Carl Gunnarsson and Colton Parayko. I'll be honest, I don't know much about Colton Parayko.
I don't know anything, but I know he's gotten the score sheet a few times. It'll be interesting to see he is like tomorrow.
He's got two goals so far. And then your third pairing.
That was against Calgary.
Yeah, your third pairing of Joel Edmondson and Robert Bortuzzo. The Jets have to be looking at their offensive depth lines and saying that's a matchup we can take advantage of, especially Perreault, Ehlers, and Scheifele, the way they've been able to take, you know, get going offensively so far this year.
Yeah, and the Jets right now are healthy, with the exception of Ben Chiarot, who mm-hmm. might be back Sunday. We're not sure. But aside from Ben Chiarot right now, and also Grant Clitson, but we don't need to mention him because unfortunately he's out for the season, but they're pretty healthy, Rich, and Party's been doing.
Whole team's ready.
The Party's been doing pretty well there with Buff. So I mean, you got to take advantage here. It's a winnable game. The good news is if you slip up or you only get 1 point in this game, you know you're 4-1 right
That's
now.
That's right.
So I mean, you have a little bit of room for error. That's what's really nice about the Jets. I mean, I tweeted this yesterday. I mean, a year ago shows you how quickly things change in the NHL. A year ago, Jets are 1-4.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's reversed at 4-1.
Everybody's pressing the panic button.
You know, I think now, you know, the boys could go out last night after the game. They could, you know, have a couple drinks, celebrate. They're not as nervous. I think last year.
They were talking about the team or you?
Yeah, you're talking about you. Ezzy's much less nervous than he was after last year at the same time.
Needless to say.
But he still managed to find the time to find drinks last year at this time, too.
Yeah.
Way to persevere through the adversity, Ezzy.
This Jets team, I think, is very relaxed. I think this is a group, if you know, you see these guys, they're having fun at the rink, you know, and that's good to see. So I think it'll be another good one on Sunday.
When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about penalties. Do the Jets take too many penalties? And really, does it matter? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Lego has indicated a penalty with Sammy Sato being attended to. Farmer's just going to continue to finish his check.
That audio from a Winnipeg Jets penalty last season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, last season we know that the Winnipeg Jets were the most penalized team in the NHL in terms of the times that they were shorthanded, coming in at 308 times most in the NHL. This year so far, they've been shorthanded the sixth most times, 19, of course, early in the year. And lots been made, a lot of consternation, a lot of people saying the Jets take too many penalties. It's going to come back and cost the Jets too many penalties. I went back and I did some research and I looked into actually, how many playoff teams are in the top half of the league in terms of minor penalties taken or time shorthanded. And how many teams how many of the least penalized teams make the playoffs? Turns out there is absolutely no correlation between taking penalties, being shorthanded, and missing the playoffs. Is the Jets' tendency to take penalties much ado about nothing?
Well, first of all, I think your research proves that it might be much ado about nothing. But I don't think it's much ado about nothing, guys, when it comes down to game-by-game situations and kind of leading into how you want to play later in the season and into the playoffs. And what I mean by that is when the points are so crucial, giving up a power play or taking too many penalties and giving the other team more power play opportunities can really come back to hurt you. And we saw the Jets take a lot of penalties on that road trip against the New York Rangers. The Jets got into a lot of penalty trouble, especially in that second period. I think they took 5 minor penalties. They had 8 penalties total, not all of which resulted in power plays. I think the Rangers, if I'm not mistaken, had 5 power plays that game. But yesterday, for example, the Jets only gave the Flames 2 power plays, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Jets were pretty good on home ice, not taking too many penalties. But the coach of any hockey team will always tell you they don't mind the penalties. There are going to be penalties in hockey games. I mean, it's hockey. There's going to be penalties. There's going to be tripping penalties, all this. They don't like the minor penalties, mm-hmm. especially in the offensive zone, that have little to do with the play. And the pattern for the Winnipeg Jets over the years has unfortunately been those minor penalties that don't necessarily have anything to do with the play, Drew. So you're talking the tripping, the hooking.
Stick infractions.
And that can also change and upset the flow of a game, Rich. And I think that's what the Jets, I think, are needing to get better at. And I think you saw that yesterday. And I don't think the Jets will take as many penalties as they did last year. I think that was a pretty crazy year. But I think the penalties are a byproduct of the way the Jets played last year. And I think the Jets want to continue to play. They might not be as physical as they were last year. But, I mean, guys like Andrew Ladd, guys like Adam Lowry, Byfuglien, Stewart, I mean, Trouba, these guys play a physical type of game, and they get their sticks involved sometimes, and they're going to take penalties. So, in a roundabout way, I think I'm not too concerned about a lot of the penalties that were taken on the road trip because they got the points, right?
Right.
They got 6 of 8 points, so they took a lot of penalties. But their penalty killing's good. Pavlik's the best penalty killer on the ice. So, again, I think you probably want to take less minor penalties that don't have anything to do with the play in the offensive zone. And I think Maurice, I imagine, has talked a lot to the Jets about that. But I definitely don't think, I mean, if that's the biggest problem the Jets have, then that's a good problem, right?
Here's how the numbers break down, Richie, before I let you in. In 2014-15, the season that just ended, 10 of the 16 playoff teams finished in the top half of the NHL in the number of times shorthanded, meaning they were more penalized than less penalized. In 2013-14...
It's important because you mentioned it doesn't include total penalty minutes, so fights and things like that.
That's right. This is just time shorthanded.
That's the most important.
Yeah. 2013-14, 8 playoff teams. So exactly half finished in the top half in the number of times shorthanded. 2011-12, I skipped the lockout year because of the smaller sample size. In 2011-12, 6 of the 16 playoff teams finished in the top half of the NHL in the number of times shorthanded. So right now you can see that it's exactly even. And then going back to 2010, 2011, 10 of the 16 playoff teams finished in the top half in the number of times shorthanded. So long story short, add it all up, 4 years worth of research, 64 playoff teams, 34 of those 64 playoff teams finished in the top half in the NHL in the number of times shorthanded. So they were among the more penalized teams than less penalized teams. So it's, you know, a slight, it's pretty even. But, I mean, I think it just goes to show you that, would you agree, Richard, that maybe on the micro level, on a game-by-game micro level, taking penalties matters, whereas on the macro level and looking at the entire season as a whole, it matters a lot less?
Yeah, Drew, I mean, your stats there seem to indicate that as well. I'm looking at something I wrote way back in 2010 in terms of some penalized teams, too. And I mean, there is an effect. I mean, every time you take a penalty, you put yourself shorthanded, you have your odds of scoring go down considerably and your odds of being scored against increase. So, I mean, does it help you? No, I think there's a lot of other factors, Drew, in terms of the talent level and different things like that. But I see your points on the be-all and end-all. And I think what you're really trying to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is sometimes a team that takes a lot of penalties is part of their identity and the way they play. So as a product of the Jets last year, they played a physical style, get in your face, and they took penalties as a product of that. And had they not played that way, maybe they would have had less penalties, but maybe they wouldn't have been as effective.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summation of my point. And just that it's less impactful and less dramatic than sort of people are making it out to be, you know, when they see the Jets taking a number of penalties throughout the course, especially of that road trip. A lot of those penalties, by the way, were what I would describe as questionable calls by the officials as well.
Right, and when you're talking about teams like Dallas, for example, that's when you run into problems. I mean, if you watch Dallas play this year, I mean, they can beat you with 6-7 different players.
You're saying their power play is so good.
Well, and it actually wasn't that good last year. It struggled, but it'll be better this year. But I'm saying teams like Dallas or Washington or Tampa Bay, teams that have really good offenses, you're just making it, as Rich said, more and more difficult on yourself. But I think with the Winnipeg Jets, they're almost a team, I think, that is comfortable taking 3, 4, 5 penalties a game because they know their penalty killing is excellent. And it's been excellent, really, year by year. It's the power play that really only came on last year. But the penalty killing, if you look at the Jets year over year, they're usually at the very least in the top half as far as penalty killing goes. Their penalty killing's never been bottom 5 or bottom 10 in the NHL. So it doesn't seem to be their Achilles heel, Drew. So I mean, you'd be a fool to say that the Jets
were 13th in penalty kill percentage last year.
Right. So, I mean, the Jets shouldn't be, I mean, completely oblivious to the fact that they should maybe not be taking penalties. But again, it's kind of the style they play and the type of players they have, right? I mean, like, look at Ladd historically. He takes penalties. Buff takes penalties. I mean, this is what they do, the type of hockey that they play. Trouba, even though, you know, Trouba, you don't want him to be in the penalty box too much, sometimes he'll take a penalty. And that's just the way it is. And the Jets seem to always have that penalty killing to get them out of it.
They just don't want the cheap, you know, offensive zone stick penalties and things like that. That's the biggest thing. If you're going to get some physical penalties, so be it. I mean, it's part of the game you're going to get penalties, but the Jets have more talent now than they did before.
Yep.
They couldn't be taking those penalties. You know, the bad penalties with the lack of skill really puts you behind the eight ball, puts you behind chasing games and things like that. It's important also for teams that play a conservative style, I think. You know, for example, certain teams that can play from behind and have difficulty if they force the issue, them taking a lot of penalties really puts them behind the eight ball. A team like Chicago, I'm not sure what their stats are offhand in terms of penalties, but they can score at will. There's a little bit less concern for them.
Last 2 years, Chicago's been in the bottom half of the number of times they've taken penalties. So for the most part, they're usually down at the bottom, which would make sense because they're not a very physical team. In the 4 years of data I have here, they finished 28th in terms of the number of times they were shorthanded. This one was 24th, 29th, and 29th. So they're really at the bottom of the NHL. They take very few penalties, the Chicago Blackhawks.
And the Jets coaching staff will look at these numbers and monitor this type of stuff. But as far as, you know, addressing the issue, Rich, it's for them, it's more of a pattern, and they'll say certain things to players, but really, it's not something you can control that much. When you have these penalties, like, Buff is the type of player, he needs to be engaged physically, so he's going to take penalties just because of how physical he is. Again, you know, a guy like Andrew Ladd, he'll always have 60, 70 penalty minutes. Obviously, he'll get in some fights throughout the year. But just the type of game he plays, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you should be too concerned right now, especially with yesterday when they only took two minor penalties.
See, I mean, I wrote about this, Drew. I'm just, you know, looking back because you kind of went over the past few years, right? Mm-hmm. I had an article in 2009, so it's 2015. Wow. 6 years ago, Drew.
Yeah.
I tell you, there is a correlation between, back then, of the seasons that I had examined, which were seasons since the lockout, there was a correlation between taking penalties and accumulating points in the standings. So, I mean, they're not tied at all. There is a tie. It's not the strongest correlation you'll ever see, but there is a correlation nonetheless. I mean, I generally summed it up by saying teams that take more penalties tend to accumulate fewer points in the standings. You'd assume that. So, while it may not be all the teams that finish in the top half or the bottom half of penalty minutes being shorthanded, make the playoffs. But there is a correlation. I mean, these teams can't just go out recklessly and just say, oh, it doesn't really matter.
Rich, what's the correlation between when we have Timbits in the studio as far as how good the show's going to be?
Well, you eat all the Timbits, Ezzy, so it's really your correlation.
That's not true. I always share them.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets defense, and we'll rank it according to all 30 teams in the NHL. Where does the Jets defense rank? We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, 10 minutes before 10 in the morning. This segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
Okay, what's going on here? Because every week we talk about Frank and what he's barbecuing. The official Illegal Curve rack of lamb is what he was cooking up last week. Mm-hmm. But we're not eating any of this product here.
Well, I'll get in touch with Frank and see why he hasn't been delivering us the lamb that he's been promising
us. And he doesn't have to deliver it because he's cooking it. So it's actually up to us to deliver ourselves to him to eat it.
Fair enough. I'll let him know that we're on our way as well. Let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets defense. We do this generally every year at the start of the year, within a week or two, where we look at the Winnipeg Jets defense, the six or seven man group that they currently deploy on a nightly basis, and we try and rank them and evaluate them in the context of where do they rank among the top defenses or all the defenses in the NHL. Of course, 30 NHL teams. Where does the Jets defense of Enstrom and Myers and Sherratt and Byfuglien and Stewart and Trouba and Pardy and Postma, and more less so, the spares, but the top six. Where does the Jets' top six rank among the 30 NHL teams? So what I thought we'll do is, why don't we go through each team alphabetically, and we'll say if the Jets are better than or worse than that other team's defense. We'll sort of evaluate it out that way, and then we can break it down even further. How's that sound as a plan for you boys?
Alphabetically by city or team name? Like, we'll start with Anaheim one or
Anaheim's one. We'll start with Anaheim, the Anaheim Ducks defense. The Anaheim Ducks defense, Cam Fowler, Sammy Vatanen, Hampus Lindholm, Kevin Bieksa, Simone Dupre, and Clayton Stoner. Would you say that the Jets defense is better than or worse than that Ducks defense?
First of all, I think we got to throw in a third one there. I would probably say even.
Yeah, okay.
Right? I'm going to say even for the Anaheim Ducks and the Winnipeg Jets, and we saw the Ducks beat the Jets last year in the first round. But, this Ducks defense is very good, Rich. Mm-hmm. And we saw Simone Dupre get the contract extension, the five-year contract extension. And I think when you're looking at team defenses, Rich, it's not just about the talent of the top defenseman. So if you're talking about the top defenseman on Anaheim, it's Cam Fowler, Hampus Lindholm. But I think you're looking at it as a whole and as far as the mix, right? Is it too top-heavy? Like, certain teams, I think, are too top-heavy, and that hurts them. Chicago is actually a pretty good example, only running four defensemen. So I know we got to get through 30 teams here,
Take
Drew.
Your time,
so I shouldn't go on a soliloquy for every single team, but I'm going to say
God help us.
I'm going to say Winnipeg and Anaheim are tied.
I think the Jets have a better defense than Anaheim. Just I think better overall talent, but I think Anaheim is close. I think they have a lot of good young players, as Jets fans saw firsthand last year in the playoffs.
Next team up is the Arizona Coyotes. Some of these teams will be a lot easier. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Michael Stone, of course, of Winnipeg.
It's pretty simple there.
Yeah.
So the Jets are better defense than Arizona. Ekman-Larsson is probably better than all the defenders on the Jets. And there's some really good defenders on the Jets, but the rest of the squad, it's not. And the overall, collectively, the Arizona's defense is not comparable.
Yeah, Arizona might have the worst defense in the NHL at this point, certainly in the bottom five. As Rich mentioned, Ekman-Larsson, I think if he wasn't in Arizona, I think we'd be talking about him potentially as a Norris candidate. He's that good. And there's some really good defensemen in the NHL. I mean, we just saw Giordano. But, you know, after you get past Ekman-Larsson, Stone, and Mahalik, it's a pretty weak defense.
Boston Bruins, we know that they're sort of led by Zdeno Chara.
They're terrible.
That makes it nice and easy.
You don't have to waste time on teams like Boston.
Fair enough. The Buffalo Sabres, same thing.
Same thing.
Same thing, Buffalo Sabres. Calgary Flames, the last night's opponent. Giordano, Hamilton, Russell.
The Flames' defense is better than the Jets' defense, Drew, especially when T.J. Brody is up there moving the puck in transition. When you're going to move forward with Giordano, T.J. Brody, Chris Russell, I think he's a very good and underrated player. Dougie Hamilton, who, again, I don't love, but there was good value that they got for him. And Dennis Wiedemann as your five top guys, so you can play in different situations. That's a better defense, 1-6, than the Jets have. That's a great defense Calgary has.
Yeah, and even a guy like Derek Englund, I think he's gotten better. Even though Derek Englund sometimes, I think, tries to do too much physically, and, you know, he's obviously a guy that can drop the mitts. Englund is a seventh defenseman. It's kind of like a party. The Jets and Flames are very similar, I think, as far as defensemen go. Giordano is the best out of either team, because he's a top five defenseman in the NHL.
I agree with that.
But I mean, when you're talking about Trouba, he's a future top five defenseman, in my opinion. And Myers is good and buff. But I agree with Rich. Calgary, to me, is their defense as a whole is better than the Jets, not by a lot, but I would say they're better.
Carolina Hurricanes
next. Although I will say this quickly about Carolina, watching them the other night. You know, they're putting in Ryan Murphy into the lineup. I know they sent down Hayden Fleury. I haven't seen him play, so I can't speak to it. Noah Hannafin, I think, is going to be very good.
Yep.
And they have Justin Falk, who's an underrated, really smart player. So, you know, you see their top four core lining up. If Ryan Murphy's able to take the next step and Hayden Fleury, you can see a top four of those players with puck-moving ability that they've lacked.
But
they're
not
now, as not Rich mentioned, though, with Hannafin and Fleury, two first-round picks, 3 or 4 years from now, it's going to be, as Rich just said, it's going to be a whole totally different story.
Chicago Blackhawks, Keith, Chalmerson, Svedberg, Seabrook, Daly, Van Riemsdyk.
Yeah, true. I mean, it's better than the Jets. I mean, Keith, Seabrook. I mean, I know they had Odile last year instead of Trevor Daly, but that team just went to the Stanley Cup Final, won, and had some of the most dominant performance from their squad. I mean,
Chicago's defense is better, Drew, and I mentioned this in the offseason. I think Trevor Daly's actually improvement over Johnny Oduya as an overall defenseman. As Rich mentioned, Duncan Keith, Hall of Famer. Brent Seabrook, arguably a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. Jarmelson, on a lot of other teams, he's their number one defenseman. Yep. Very good defenseman. And Trevor Van Riemsdyk has really come along there as a rookie defenseman. Well, I guess he's not a rookie anymore because he played last year, but very good defenseman. And, you know, other guys, once you get down the roster, Rundblad, not having Nick Leddy anymore, I think that hurt their depth, but
for sure.
Top four defensemen are best in the NHL.
Colorado Avalanche, just
next.
Better defense, though, this year.
Yeah, but still not.
You know, getting Beauchemin and Zadorov and all that, but I would say the Jets as a whole are better, especially on the defensive side of the puck.
Columbus Blue Jackets, Jack Johnson, Fedor Tuten, Ryan Murray, David Savard. Jets are better?
Next, yeah. Columbus, Columbus, Drew, that's a little bit, and there's some players there I like, but you get what you pay for, too.
Still haven't won a game.
They've been spending money on defense. I mean, they spent like $14 million on defense, whatever the number is.
Mm-hmm.
They give that to the forwards when they cough.
Yeah. Dallas Stars, Alex Goligoski, John Klingberg.
Jets defense is better than Dallas's. I like what he's done there, Jim Neal. He's acquired talent. He's put Jason Mayer as a puck-moving defenseman, and they've called up and signed long-term a guy like John Klingberg to a, I think, would be a very team-friendly deal. The Jets still have a better defense than Dallas.
Yeah, and John Klingberg, by the way, they just hit a diamond in the rough with him. I mean, he was their best defenseman last year as a rookie, as you mentioned, Rich. And, yeah, I mean, Johnny Oduya, you know, a nice acquisition there. And as Rich mentioned, Demers, you know, actually, Yuri Jokapaka has been a kind of pleasant surprise. I just love saying his name.
Yeah, I knew that was the case.
He's the best Yurki since Yurki Lume. Jets' defense is better, but not as much as it used to be. I think Dallas's defense is one of the most underrated in the NHL, actually.
The Detroit Red Wings. So this is a defense that's led by Nicholas Cronwall, Jonathan Erickson, Kyle Quincy, Mike Green, Brandon Smith, and Jakob Kindle.
I think the Jets have a better defense than Detroit. Detroit's defense is a pretty good job of moving the puck.
Also, Danny DeKeyser, sorry.
It's closer, but I think the Jets' defense is better.
Yeah, and they had to go out and acquire Mike Green because they just weren't getting enough offense from their defensemen. I mean, they just don't have Lidstrom and Rafalski anymore. It was pretty much Cronwall, and then Brendan Smith had a bad year last year. And I like Danny DeKeyser a lot. Played for Western Michigan under Andy Murray there. But as a whole, when you're talking about Trouba, Myers, Buff, Enstrom at the top, better. But again, Red Wings I don't think are that far away from the Jets. I think if you add one more defenseman into that mix, and you know, I know that the Detroit Red Wings are probably going to be someone who are looking at acquiring a defenseman prior to the trade deadline. I think that defense could easily become just as good as the Jets.
Edmonton Oilers, I'm fairly confident we can skip over.
Yeah.
The Florida Panthers, Brian Campbell and Aaron Ekblad, Willie Mitchell and Eric Gudbrandsson, Dmitry Kulikov and Alex Petrovic.
I mean, you know, Petrovic's actually a player who I've liked what I've seen early in the season, but overall, Drew, I mean, 1-6, I think the Jets are still the better defense. Aaron Ekblad's a tremendous player. Brian Campbell, though, possibly heading into free agency, and the guy Willie Mitchell's seen his best years. Kulikov moves the puck well. He can do some good things. He can be physical at times, but Jets have a better defense in Florida.
The Los Angeles Kings, Braden McNabb and Drew Doughty, Jake Muzzin and Alec Martinez, Christian Ehrhoff and Derek Forbort.
See, if Forbort was a former UND player, if
we'll talk about him in rapid fire.
Yeah. If we're having this conversation last year, the Kings, I say, are better than the Winnipeg Jets. If you've got Slava Voynov in the lineup, if you've got Robin Regier in the lineup, this Jets defense is better. And the Kings, speaking of teams that are top-heavy, I mean, Doughty and Muzzin, that's a solid top pair there. But Christian Ehrhoff has struggled early on for the Kings, not the best defensively. I like the Jets' top six better.
And one last team before we go to break and do the second half, the Minnesota Wild. Ryan Suter, Jared Spurgeon, Jonas Brodin, Matt Dumba, Marco Scandella, and Christian Folan.
You know, I'll get in here. I think the Wild defense is better. Ryan Suter is the best defenseman on either team. And they've actually moved Jonas Brodin off of the top pair. I know Rich and I have, you know, argued about this a little bit. I really like Dumba. He's starting to come into his own in his second year in the NHL. I think the Wild have a top five defense, maybe even top three defense in the NHL.
Richard?
I think they're even. I think they're very close in terms of quality. I can see Ezzie's point for sure. I mean, I think Suter's best defenseman of the 12, if you're considering top six versus top six. I like Jared Spurgeon. I think Marco Scandella is a good defenseman. I like Brodin.
Folan is good, too.
I'm not as sold on Dumba as Ezzie, but I can see the you know, he moves the puck real nice, and he can be a good defenseman. But I think they're about even. Well, I think they're better on the left side. The Jets are better on the right.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll do the second half of the teams evaluating the Winnipeg Jets defense among the 30 NHL teams. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. We're continuing our ranking of the Winnipeg Jets defense among the 30 NHL teams. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent.
You know, Drew, I love doing these team-by-team rankings, and, you know, if you're listening right now, tweet at us, because I think this is one of those conversations that you can have kind of amongst beers or at the water cooler or whatever as far as where the defense ranks, because at the end we're going to give our overall ranking for the Jets defense, and it's probably not going to be too far off from where you at home would have the Jets D ranked.
And if you're drinking beer at 10 in the morning while listening to us, we're certainly not judging you whatsoever.
Beer for breakfast, Drew. That's what I always say.
That's true. Montreal Canadiens defense is next up on our list. Markov and Subban, Yemelin and Petrie, Nathan Beaulieu and Tom Gilbert. Jets better, worse, even with the Montreal Canadiens.
Hold on. Does Carey Price count as a defenseman?
It does not.
I'm going to say the Jets are better than the Montreal Canadiens. P.K. Subban would be the best defenseman of the two teams, Rich. But I think once you get to the second and third pairs, I really like Nathan Beaulieu, actually. He's a guy that has really come into his own. He's a physical defenseman. But, you know, when you look at the Jets defensively and as a group, when you're talking about Ben Chiarot and Dustin Byfuglien as a third pair, I'll take that third pair, Rich, over Montreal's third pair.
Yeah, you know, I do think it's close, Drew, but I think the Jets have a better defense than the Montreal Canadiens do. 1-6. Subban is the best of the bunch there, but I'm not the biggest Jeff Petrie fan. I mean, he's a solid defenseman, but I'm not the biggest Jeff Petrie fan. Tom Gilbert's pretty soft, and I think the Jets overall bring different things and more and different things to the table.
Nashville Predators, Roman Josi and Shea Weber, Matthias Ekholm and Ryan Ellis, Barrett Jackman and Seth Jones.
I think Rich and I are going to agree on this one, maybe. Nashville's better than Winnipeg.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Shea Weber, you guys know how much I love Shea Weber. I mean, he's been a staple of the Canadian Olympic teams now. I mean, Shea Weber is the second or third best defenseman in the NHL. We can all agree on that. Roman Josi was an underrated defenseman, but people have started to realize how good Roman Josi is there with Shea Weber. But then, you know, you look at Seth Jones, he's starting to get better and better. He's still very young at 21 years old. Ryan Ellis, I've always liked, smaller guy. You know, he started to mature as a defenseman, too, in his mid-20s. Ekholm, very underrated defenseman. This group is very good defensively. That's why Nashville was so successful last year. I mean, you just don't score that many goals on them.
I mean, you're looking at a right side that one of the few right sides actually compares to the Winnipeg Jets, and Roman Josi is one of the most underrated defensemen in the National Hockey League. You have a nice mix of speed, size, physicality, puck moving, everything. Yeah, I think you could argue they're the best defense in the National Hockey League.
And Barrett Jackman's still getting it done at 34 years old.
Yeah. I'm 34 years old, and I don't think you're going to put me out to pasture just yet. The New Jersey Devils, Andy Green, Adam Larson, John Merrill, John Moore, David Schlemko, Damon Severson.
Devils have a better defense. Just kidding. no, but the...
There goes our credibility in one fall swoop.
You know, we had Bryce Salvador on during the summer when he retired, and I mean, Bryce Salvador, of course, didn't play much last year, and he's not passed on the torch of the captainship to, if that's a word, to Andy Green. So it's basically Andy Green and a very young group, probably the youngest defense in the NHL. I don't have the numbers, but I would imagine with Eric Jelena and Damon Severson and Adam Larson there, it's one of the youngest defenses in the NHL. But, I mean, the Jets obviously have a better D there.
New York Islanders, Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk, Calvin DeHaan and Travis Hamonic, Brian Strait and Marek Zidlicki.
Jets have a better defense than that group.
I'm going to say even.
Really?
Travis Hamonic, I think, you know, head-to-head with any of the defensemen on the Jets defensively, I might say he's the best defensively of all defensemen in these two teams. I mean, Nick Leddy, Johnny Boychuk, I mean, these are good defensemen. Calvin DeHaan, I know Rich likes him just as much as I do. Not a big Zidlicki fan, but, I mean, this Islanders defense is good. It's much improved. You know, that's why they were able to move a guy like Griffin Reinhart. And not to mention, looking forward, they've got a guy like Ryan Pollock coming in there. So I'm going to say even.
The New York Rangers, Ryan McDonough and Dan Girardi, Mark Stahl and Dan Boyle when he's not a healthy scratch, Keith Yandel and Kevin Klein.
Well, I think the Rangers have a better defense than the Jets do, and... you know, you look at Girardi and Klein on the right side, certainly the Jets' right side, I think, you know, Boyle at the right, Jets' right side is better, but the Rangers' left side is just so much better than the Jets. I mean, you're talking McDonough, Yandel, and Stahl versus Enstrom, say, Chiarot and Stewart. I mean, different ballgame there, so I think the Rangers have a better overall defense.
Yeah, I'm going to say the Rangers' defense is better than the Jets, Drew, but not by as much as people might think. I think that the Jets offensively lose a little bit to, as Rich mentioned, you're talking, you know, Boyle and who was a healthy scratch when they played the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
But Yandle has added that power play specialist element to the Rangers. But defensively, I think the Jets aren't that far off, even though Girardi, McDonough, I mean, those guys have been getting it done for years. So,
the Ottawa Senators, Mark Mathot and Eric Carlson, Patrick Wierkoch and Cody Ceci, Jared Cowan and Mark Borowiecki.
I'll get in your first, Rich. I'm going to say the Jets' defense is better, but that Ottawa defense, especially under Dave Cameron when he came in for Paul McLean, is underrated. And everybody knows about Eric Carlson. The guy, to me, that's improved the most on that defense is Jared Cowan.
Yeah, I mean, they want more from him. They're trying to give him an opportunity. We know that Mathot and Carlson could be the best pair in the league. Carlson's just a dynamic player. Mathot's a nice compliment. But I think the Jets' defense overall is better. That's a nice young defense in Ottawa. In a couple of years, it'll be interesting to see who's better.
The Philadelphia Flyers, I think this will be a quick win. Mark Strait.
Yeah, no.
Skip right through it. Mm-hmm. We apologize to all our Flyers fans.
They have a few young defensemen coming through the system in a few years.
Yep.
It may be different. Maybe
Sanheim,
5 years.
Provorov, yeah. Morin. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Pittsburgh Penguins, Ian
Gossbear,
Cole,
yeah.
Chris Letang, Olimata, Adam Clendenning, well, Brian Doolin,
Jets defense
and Ben
is better.
Lovejoy.
Yeah. I mean, offensively, Pittsburgh is very dangerous with Mata and Letang. And, you know, we talked to Mike Colligan about this on the Wednesday show. Ian Cole was actually a nice surprise there. Ben Lovejoy, you know, coming back is now a third-pairing defenseman for them, but the Jets defense is better.
San Jose Sharks, Paul Martin, Brent Burns, Mark Edward Vlasic, Justin Braun, Brendan Dillon, and Matt Tennyson.
Well,
this could be even.
You know, I liken somewhat Brent Burns to Dustin Byfuglien on their games.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Braun is a good two-way defenseman. Vlasic is, you know, you look at the defenses overall. I'm probably going to go with even here.
I'm going to say the Jets' defense is better, but I want to go even. The only reason I'm probably giving the Jets a little bit of an advantage, Rich, is because offensively, I think with the likes of Trouba and Myers and Enstrom and Buff, I think they're better. But Burns and Vlasic, 1-2, versus if you want to say Myers, Trouba, 1-2. Yeah, and that's why I think Drew picked them to make the playoffs, because it's really...
Martin,
right now,
Martin Jones won't let a goal in.
Yeah,
exactly. This team is really built from the goal out, right? That's the way those Sharks teams used to be with Nabokov, right? So,
St. Louis Blues, Bomeister and Pietrangelo. We know Shattenkirk would normally be in the lineup. Carl Gunnarsson, Robert Bortuzzo, Joel Edmondson, Colton Parayko.
I think it's even. I think the Blues used to be better, but I think it's even now.
I'm going to take the Blues having a better defense than the Winnipeg Jets. Not by a lot. I'll say by a hair. With Shattenkirk in the lineup and a healthy lineup, Bortuzzo's actually been very surprising for the St. Louis Blues coming in there. You know, they've lost Jackman and Cole, so they've changed a little bit. Rich mentioned, you know, he doesn't think they're as good as they used to be, but I'll give the slight advantage because, as far as I'm concerned, Pietrangelo is still a top 10 defenseman in the league.
Tampa Bay Lightning, Victor Hedman and Anton Strahlman, Jason Garrison and Matt Carl, Braden Coburn and Andre Suster.
Well, I'll go first. I think Rich is going to disagree with me. I think the Lightning defense is better. Strahlman and Hedman, that was your top pair leading them to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. Braden Coburn, I think, is perfect for a team that has that much skill. He struggled a lot on Philadelphia being kind of a top four defenseman, but Coburn, Matt Carl struggles a lot in his own zone, but I still like him offensively. Schuster, big guy, underrated. You know, he plays not as much. Maybe he's more of a third-pairing guy. But I really like that Lightning defense, so I'm going to take the Lightning.
Yeah, I'm probably going to agree just because they collectively can move the puck better, I think, overall.
I thought you were going to disagree.
No, I probably agree just because, you know, all those guys you mentioned, as some of them have drawbacks in their own zone, but they can all move the puck. Really nice.
I mean, Garrison, I forgot to mention.
And he can shoot the puck. He can really shoot the puck. So... That's a real good. And another thing is, it's kind of like Doughty, but the more depth. And then when you have Hedman, you can play that many minutes, and that's collectively the group. They don't play as many minutes. You know, when you put guys in lesser roles,
sure.
I think it makes it easier to stomach. I do think they're better.
Toronto Maple Leafs.
Just
pass right over the Maple Leafs. No surprise.
Absolutely.
Vancouver Canucks. Alex Edler and Chris Tanev. Dan Hamhuis and Matt Bartkowski. Ben Hutton and Lucas Spezza.
Jets are better.
The Canucks defense is good. It's you know, Kevin Bieksa was a staple there for 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, he's on his last legs here, and I think I think Bartkowski really does help puck moving.
Yep.
I haven't seen Hutton enough to comment, but they like him obviously enough to waive Corrado.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, maybe Vancouver is not as good as the Jets, but it's pretty solid group.
Washington Capitals, the last team, Brooks Orpik and John Carlson, Carl Alsner and Matt Niskanen, Dmitry Orlov and Taylor Chorney.
That's a tough one. I want to pick the Jets here, but offensively, and we were talking Carlson, and I mean, he had a 55-point season last year. I'll say even.
Yeah, this one is interesting for me too, Drew. I mean, with Green last year, I probably say the Capitals, because that right side was, you know, extremely dangerous offensively. I think 1 through 6, the Jets are probably slightly better.
So you got better as you got even?
Yeah, that's tight, though.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to tabulate all the results, and we'll give you our final ranking for where we think the Winnipeg Jets will end up in terms of the best defense in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Minutes past 10 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. I had a sandwich yesterday for lunch. I took some of my coworkers. 5 stars all around is what the ratings were on the sandwich.
Did you pick up the tab?
I did not. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And if you're ever looking for Ezzy, odds are pretty good that he's going to be there. Continuing with our exercise, looking at the Jets' defense and ranking it among the NHL's 30 teams, we have agreement on the following between you two fine gentlemen, that the Jets defense is not as good as the Flames, the Blackhawks, the Predators, the Rangers, and the Lightning. Where we have some disagreement between you two are on the following teams. The Anaheim Ducks, we have 1 vote for the Jets being better and 1 vote for the Jets defense being even with the Ducks. The Minnesota Wild, we have 1 vote for the Jets being even and 1 vote for the Jets being worse than the Wild defensemen. The New York Islanders, we have 1 vote for the Jets being better and then 1 vote for the Jets being even with the Islanders' defense. The San Jose Sharks, same thing, 1 vote for the Jets being better, 1 vote for the Jets being even. The St. Louis Blues, 1 vote for the Jets being worse, 1 vote for the Jets being even. And the Washington Capitals, 1 vote for the Jets defense being better, 1 vote for the Jets defense being even with that of the Capitals.
So essentially, Rich believes the Jets probably rank 7th in the NHL, and I probably have them ranked 10th. I think I have 3 or 4 more teams that I think are better than the Jets. So needless to say, we both agree that the Jets have a top defense, top 10 defense, I should say, in the NHL.
I think that's absolutely the case. When you look at it, there's very few teams that can throw to right side like the Jets can. And the thing about the right side that the Jets have is that they can all move the puck real well. Bufflin and Myers especially. Yvanstrom can move the puck. Sure, the left side is a little bit thin after that, and people may not love Tobias Enstrom, but he can move the puck and create offense and get it out of his own zone quick and start transition. And the size they have on the right side and the physicality they have on the left side behind Enstrom, there's a lot of depth. There's a lot to like here. Now the question is, if you want to get, we've talked about this on the show many, many times. The question is, how does that continue? And by that I mean, what happens with Dustin Bufflin to solidify that? And if he leaves or is moved out, if he doesn't stay and is leaved or is moved out, do they get somebody to replace him on the right side, or likely do they try to get a fit on the left side? But that would transform the way the team looks.
or if they keep Byfuglien, I mean,
absolutely, which is an option.
An option also is keeping Byfuglien, and if all of a sudden Josh Morrissey is ready after a year, or you know, maybe even 2 years in the AHL, who knows? If he's ready to step in, does that improve the Jets' defense and put him even higher? Right now, we have him at a peak at the sixth best team in the NHL. If Morrissey can come in and be a fit on that left side, maybe. Replacing Mark Stewart or replacing Ben Sherratt or Adam Partey, all of a sudden does the Jets defense move from top six in the NHL, peaking at say sixth best to maybe being a third best or a second best defense in the NHL? So it's sort of, I mean, it goes to show, can you afford to get rid of Dustin Byfuglien given what it does to your defense on the overall, and keeping him, does that make your defense, an upper echelon defense, one of the top two or top three in the entire league?
Yeah, it's a good question, Drew. And when you look at the Jets defense with Enstrom, Myers, and Byfuglien already, you have a lot of money tied up there, and Trouba's going to either get a bridge contract or a long-term contract. So I personally believe, and I've said this again and again if you've listened to the show, I think the Jets should sign Byfuglien because he's that valuable to the team. But the question, or I guess the reality remains, Richie, if the Jets trade Dustin Byfuglien or lose him to free agency, there's a hole there that, in my opinion, cannot be filled. You cannot replace Dustin Byfuglien. There's no trade out there where you're going to get Dustin Byfuglien in return, or somebody that's of equal value, in my opinion. If you're trading him, you're getting a draft pick and probably a prospect or a roster player, but there's nobody that has his combination of size and skill. So, you take that out of the equation. And you mentioned that Richie might have the Jets as the sixth best or seventh best defense in the NHL. I think if you take Byfuglien out, and even if you replace him with someone who's slightly worse, I think you're just going to see that ranking go further and further down, right? Mm-hmm. Because look, over the last 5 years, I mean, he's top 10 in defenseman scoring over the last 5 years or so, right? I guess he was a forward a little bit in there, but yeah, what I'm saying.
Yeah, he's a dynamic defenseman, and the subtraction of him from the Jets defense, the impact is significant on the Jets defense ranking in the course of this exercise.
And it's not just offensively.
And on the team.
You lose a lot defensively. I think, that's the whole thing with Buff, is that he's proven that he's a better defensive defenseman, I think, than he was given credit for. He lost the weight. He's used his size, I think, better over the years. And that's something too, Rich. If you don't have Buff, making sure that people aren't crossing the blue line there and thinking mm-hmm. twice, or punishing a guy in the corner, I think you're losing that physical element to your defense too.
Well, I mean, you saw, the number of defensemen who can make the play that he made yesterday to get the game-winning goal for the Jets. And you talked about it, Richie. Pickpocketing Johnny Gaudreau at the Jets blue line, taking it up the ice, having the... I mean, yes, it's a terrible, it's a bad goal in the sense that the goaltender should never have left the post like that. But the number of players who have the awareness and the hockey sense to realize that opportunity is there is not very many. And that's what you're losing potentially if Dustin Byfuglien moves out of Winnipeg during the course of this year or during the offseason.
Good luck trading him if you can't sign him, though.
Just because of the nature where the team is?
Yeah, I mean, they're playing real well right now.
I know.
We have a playoff team, it looks, early, but I think they're going to be a playoff team. I said that before, so it's tough decisions coming up here.
Well, and I mean, every game, every day. We thought it would happen in July with Andrew Ladd. We were expecting it to be right around the NHL draft, then nothing. Then July ended in August and training camp, and day by day, I mean, it becomes that much harder for Kevin Cheveldayoff to figure out what he wants to do with this Jets lineup. Let's head to break. When we return, Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is going to join us to talk about the Blues ahead of their visit to Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.